Okay, thank you so much to my good old friend, Rav Benny, and Sarah. And all of you, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for allowing this to happen. I want to also thank the OUJLIC for helping to arrange this annual tradition. We were just talking, is it more enjoyable to learn in the Beis Medrash or in the classroom? And I think there's definitely advantages to both. How often does Torah get to be taught in this room? Tell me, how often? Once a year? Once a week? Once a month? Right, these walls are also thirsty to learn Torah, so it's a nice opportunity for us to walk outside of the Beis Medrash and to be able to learn. Today is Som Gedalia. And it's a fast day that commemorates the murder, the tragic death, the assassination of a very great tzaddik, a very great Jew. And I want to begin by trying to understand a little bit why Tzom Gedalia is something that's relevant to the Aseres Yimei Teshuva. We just finished Rosh Hashanah, we're heading towards Yom Kippur. Historically, as we're about to see, the story of Gedalia, the tragedy of Gedalia's death took place during these days. But we have to ask ourselves, on a deeper level, why did Hashem orchestrate it? B'hashkacha pratis, why is it? What's the message in the death of Gedalia that speaks to us coming out of Rosh Hashanah, heading towards Yom Kippur, in these awesome days of tshuva? Begin with the words of the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Tanios, in the Laws of Fasting, Yesham yamim shekol Yisrael mis'an. There are days that traditionally the Jewish people fast. Mipnei hatzaros she'eru behen, because of tragedies, because of difficulties that took place at those particular times. And the reason that we fast, when we fast it's good to know why we're fasting, kedei la'orer halavavos, to awaken our hearts, liftoach darchei ha'tshuva. Because when the heart is open, pathways of tshuva seem to emerge. And we should remember the mistakes of the past, we should learn from those mistakes, and we shouldn't repeat those mistakes, because when we repeat those mistakes, unfortunately the tragedies also repeat themselves. And then the Rambam continues with the halach, and he says there are four major Jewish fast days that commemorate tragedies. And the first one of the calendar year, starting from Tishrei, is Yom Shlishi B'Tishrei, today, the third of Tishrei. Shebo Nehara Gedalia Ben Achikam. This was the day that Gedalia Ben Achikam, we'll review the story in a few moments, but this was the day that Gedalia Ben Achikam was killed. And the Rambam uses a very sad expression. The Rambam says, V'nichbas gacheles Yisrael hanishara. The last ember, the gacheles, the coal of the Jewish people that was still a little bit on fire was extinguished. With Gedalia's death, that would really be, so to speak, the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of Jews being in Eretz Yisrael in the time period around Chorban Bayis Rishon. And the Rambam says, V'sivev lahatam galusan. And this caused the conclusion of their galus. This made galus fine. The Jews were no longer going to have a hand in Eretz Yisrael. The Jewish people would be completely removed from Eretz Yisrael, and it would take some time till we came back to build the second Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam is following the opinion of the Gemara, which says that Gedalia was killed today, the third of Tishrei. If you look in Sefer Yirmiyah, in chapter 41, the Radak, in his commentary on the Navi, thinks that Gedalia was actually killed on Rosh Hashanah. Of course, we can't fast on Rosh Hashanah. It's too much of a celebratory day. Rosh Hashanah is a happy day. Obviously, the happiness of Rosh Hashanah is balanced with it being Yom HaDin. But the Radak writes in Yirmiyah Perek Mem Aleph, he thinks, based on the Pasuk, Vayihi b'chodesh hashvi, it was b'chodesh hashvi. Radak thinks that means on Rosh Chodesh. In other words, Rosh Hashanah. Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, El, Tishrei, the seventh month. Vayihi b'chodesh hashvi, on Rosh Hashanah. The Radak says, Rosh Hashanah nera Gedalia ben Achikam, and the Tanis was delayed to Motzei, Rosh Hashanah mipnei shu Yom Tov, because it would be inappropriate to fast on Rosh Hashanah itself. But either way, today we're commemorating, whether it happened today, or it happened yesterday, or the day before, we're commemorating that last bit of hope that the Jewish people had in Eretz Yisrael during Bayis Rishon. And Gedalia's assassination was the end of the hope. It extinguished the coal, as it were, says the Rambam, of the Jewish sovereignty on any level in the land of Israel. So let's just review the story very quickly, just so again we understand how tragic it was. Bayis Rishon was destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar in the year 3338. We're starting the year 5780. Of course, according to the Jewish calendar, Tavshin Peh. The year 3338 from creation of the world, according to our Jewish tradition, that is when Bayis Rishon was destroyed. Just to help you to do the math, we left Mitzrayim in the year 2448 from creation, got the Torah. The Pasuk says in Malachim, 480 years the Beis HaMikdash was built, and the first Beis HaMikdash lasted for 410 years. So that gets you to the year 3338. That was when Nebuchadnezzar decided to destroy the first Beis HaMikdash, to kick most of the Jews out of Eretz Yisrael, but he didn't want the land to be destroyed. So he left some of the poorer Jews in Eretz Yisrael, and he appointed Gedaliah ben Achikam, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, appointed Gedaliah as the governor over the Arei Yehuda. And Gedaliah tried to keep the Jewish spirit alive in the land. Yirmiyah HaNavi was given the option to be exiled with those Jews who were leaving or to stay in Eretz Yisrael. He chose to stay in Eretz Yisrael to try to be mechazik, the small community of his fellow Jews in Eretz Yisrael. And Gedaliah was actually a great leader, a humble person, a charismatic person, and he was keeping the Jewish hopes alive in Eretz Yisrael after the Chorban Bayis Rishon, after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. There was a fellow by the name of Yishmael ben Netanya, who was a descendant of Tzidkiyahu. He was from the royal family. Whatever his problem was with Gedaliah, he was anti-Gedaliah, and he led people against Gedaliah. And Gedaliah was warned that there's someone who doesn't like you, and someone who's maybe jealous of you, and someone who's threatening to harm you. And Gedaliah, in his purity and his innocence, wouldn't accept it. And eventually, the story is told, it's the very end of Malachim Beis, or it's Yirmiyah Perek Mem to Mem Gimel, the longer version. Yishmael ben Netanya comes to Gedaliah. He's having some type of gathering along with some of the leaders of Babel. And Yishmael ben Netanya and his men kill Gedaliah. They murder Gedaliah. They assassinate Gedaliah. They kill some of the Babylonians who are at that party. And now the Jewish people have lost their leader. And they're terrified. What's Nebuchadnezzar going to say when he finds out that his appointed governor, Gedaliah, was murdered? That some of his fellow Babylonian leaders were murdered, and the Jews who were still in the land, that last little remnant of Jews, having just lost their leader, decided to get out of here. We have to run for our life. Yirmiyahu HaNavi begs them. He's for 10 days and he begs them, stay. Hashem wants you to stay. The Netzer is going to be understanding. He's not going to harm you. Stay in the land. Don't abandon the land. And that handful of Jews decided, no, we're out of here. We can't stay here anymore. Gedaliah's gone. We're out of here. And they decide to go to, of all places, Mitzrayim. It's been about 100 years since the Jews have been in Mitzrayim. They decide to go back to Mitzrayim. Yirmiyahu begged, don't go to Mitzrayim. It's not going to be good. It was the most realistic sin in their eyes. They go to Mitzrayim. Yirmiyahu warns them at the entrance of Mitzrayim, telling you, don't go to Mitzrayim. You'll see Nebuchadnezzar is going to conquer Mitzrayim. You're going to get killed by Nebuchadnezzar there. If you stay in Israel, Hashem will protect you. They don't listen. They settle in Mitzrayim. Many of the Jews of that group assimilate. And even those who didn't, and including many of those who did, were eventually killed when a few years later there was political upheaval in Mitzrayim, and Nebuchadnezzar takes advantage of that upheaval. He comes to Mitzrayim, he conquers Mitzrayim, and those Jews who didn't listen to the Navi, who refused to listen to Yirmiyah's advice, the word of Hashem is transmitted through Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Unfortunately, those Jews are killed out at that time. So that's what the Rambam is capturing in just that one little sentence, that with the death of Gedaliah, the last ember, that last coal, so to speak, of Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael was extinguished, and it put the final step, so to speak, the nail in the coffin of Gullis Bayis Rishon. It's a very tragic story, and again, it took place during these days, either Gimel Tishrei or Rosh Hashanah, but again, the question I want to think about together, Bashkacha Pratis, Hashem runs the world. Hashem had a reason that this story took place now. There's a reason we have a fast day. During these days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, there's a message in the story of the death of the tzaddik that we need to think about. Let's ask a couple of questions. Why was Gedaliah's death so significant? He was a great tzaddik. The Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah that on Gimel Tishrei, Bo Neharag Gedaliah ben Achi. Gimel Tishrei is a fast day. It was the day that Gedaliah was killed. And then the Gemara asks a strange question. Umi Hargo, who killed him? Who killed him? Why is the Gemara asking that question? Just read Sefer Malachim. Read the book of Jeremiah. Why is the Gemara saying who killed him? Yishmael ben Netanya Harga. A Jew, a fellow Jew by the name of Yishmael ben Netanya killed him. Lilameidcha, and that comes to teach us, says the Gemara, Sheshekula misashin shel tzadikim kisreifas beis alokeinu. That the death of a tzadik is like the Chorban beis hamikdash. Because this was the last bit of hope for the Jews as the Beis HaMikdash was being destroyed. That's what the Gemara says. The Pnei Yoshua, in his commentary on the Gemara, says, I don't understand. Number one, why is the Gemara asking who killed him? Go read the Pesukim, like I just mentioned a moment ago. Number two, Gedali is not the only tzaddik, and probably not the biggest tzaddik in history to die. So why do we make a fast day out of his death? And if you'll say, well, he didn't die, he was killed, so I'll tell you there were other great tzaddikim who were also killed. What is it about Tzom Gedalia that it became one of the four major fasts that the Navi Zechariah talks about? The fast of the seventh, the fast of the seventh month, is this, Gimel Tishrei. Why is it so significant? He was a tzaddik, it's true. And he died a tragic death, also true. He's not the only one to ever die that way, and he's not the biggest tzaddik to ever die. How did his yard site become a day where we have to fast and really contemplate the life of Gedalia ben Achikam? So the Pnei Yoshua says an amazing thing. A tragic thing, but the Pnei Yoshua writes the following. Ela debahani nami ika lameimar. When a tzaddik dies, or even worse, when a tzaddik is killed, if a tzaddik is killed, that brings kapara to the world. The loss of a righteous person brings healing to the world. Their death is an atonement for the world. It's a tragedy, but those who survive are the beneficiaries of that tragedy. And that's why the Gemara says that the death of a tzaddik, right, is mechaper, it brings atonement like the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But says the Pnei Yoshua, Gedalia's death did not bring atonement. Gedalia's death was just plain tragic. Normally a death brings kapara, not Gedalia's death. You know why the Gemara is asking who killed him? The Gemara knows who killed him. The Gemara is trying to explain to us what's so tragic about Gedalia's death. Why did it become a Jewish fast day? One of the big four Jewish fast days to commemorate tragedies. The answer is because a Jew killed him. A Jew killed a fellow Jew. That's what made it so tragic. Says the Pnei Yoshua, normally when a tzaddik dies, it brings kapara, it brings atonement. Even if a tzaddik is killed by one of our enemies, it brings atonement. But when a Jew, a jealous Jew, kills another Jew, that is such a tragedy. When Yishmael ben Netanya, Shahaya mi Yisrael, umizera hamalucha, a fellow Jew from the royal line, comes and brutally murders the governor of Ari Yehuda, Gedalia, tzaddik, lo shayich lomar shemisasa mechaperes. Then that death doesn't bring any atonement. That death is just a plain old tragedy. Says the Pnei Yoshua, that's what the Gemara is getting at. The Gemara is saying, Yishmael, pay attention to who killed him, and you'll understand why this day is so particularly tragic. But what does that say to us? What does that have to do with the Aseres Yimei Tshuva? I think there might be only one thing that could be more tragic, maybe, than a Jew killing a fellow Jew. I mean, it's horrible. It's a horrible thing to even think about. That there could be such hatred amongst Jews that we could literally kill one another. And to reject the advice of the Navi, Gedalia's death was a terrible tragedy. But you know what's even sadder, in a certain sense, than a Jew killing another Jew? When a person chooses to use their free will in such a destructive way, you know what's even sadder? If, God forbid, a Jew kills himself or herself. I'm not only talking about in a physical sense, which obviously is a very delicate issue, a person who commits suicide, a person who doesn't desire to live anymore. There's really nothing as painful, as shocking as a person who hates themselves so much that they don't want to be alive. But I'm talking about a Jew who chooses to spiritually kill off oneself. Again, the reason that suicide is so serious in Jewish thought and in halacha is because if Hashem gives a person potential and they can't embrace it, they can't even embrace being alive, that's such a tragedy. But my friends, we do it all the time on a smaller level, on a smaller scale. I'm not trying to say something harsh or jarring just to be jarring, but I'm trying to help us think during the Aseres Yimei Tshuva. When Hashem gives us life, when God gives us potential, when we can accomplish great things, and we choose to kill that potential, to to not give life, to not give hope, to not give purpose to the life that God has given us, that is a terrible korban. The reason that this day, Tzom Gedalia, is such a serious day is because a Jew killed another Jew. One human being taking advantage of another human being. It's a terrible tragedy, especially amongst Jews who should love one another. All the more so. But when a person becomes self-destructive, there's really nothing sadder than that. Listen to the words of one of the great Bali Musar, who lived in the late 1700s, lived a short life, lived about 43 years, the Pele Yoetz. It's a beautiful volume of Musar. He wrote topics alphabetically. And under the entry called Ahavas Atzmo, Love of Oneself, Rev Eliezer Papo, the author of the Pele Yoetz, a Rav from Bulgaria, wrote the following. Kiteva hu be'enosh she'idbia bo habore. It is the nature of man, as Hashem programmed us, she'ei ohev es atzmo, that a person loves himself or herself. That's the way it's supposed to be. That's natural. That's normal. Vahafta l'reacha kamocha, the way that it's explained by the Mefarshim, is that I have to try to want good things for someone else the same way I want good things for myself. I don't actually have to love someone like myself. The Ramban says that's impossible. A person loves himself or herself more than anyone else. And the Torah would not demand you to literally vahafta l'reacha kamocha. It's impossible for you to love someone as much as yourself. Hashem programmed us to love ourselves. That's the way Hashem made us. That's why the Gemara says, if you're walking in the desert, there's one cup of water, and it's a question of who should drink the water. Should I give it to my friend and die? Should I split it with my friend and we both die? Should I drink it myself and say sorry to my friend? You're on your own. The halacha is, chayecha kodmin, your own life comes first. Ahavta l'reacha kamocha means, after myself, I try to love my fellow Jew as much as humanly possible. So says the Pele Yoetz, Hashem programmed us to love ourselves. That's part of the human condition. Va'adam karuv etzel atzmo. And our closest relative is ourself. And therefore, he says, va'ohev es atzmo yoser mikol ha'olam. A person loves oneself more than the whole world. U'mikol davar shev ha'olam. And anything in the world. A person loves oneself. Aval yesh ra'achola. But he says, but I see a very terrible spiritual illness. Ra'as ha'yetzer hara. That sometimes the Yetzirah causes us to hate ourselves. What does it mean to hate ourselves? We love ourselves. The Yetzirah grabs a hold of a person sometimes, and it makes a person sick with all sorts of ideas that are so self-destructive. So on the one hand, you ask a person, tell me, let's be honest, let's talk real for a second. Is there anyone you love more than yourself? No. Truthfully, I love myself more than anyone else. So then says the Pele Yoetz, so then why do you do things that are so damaging to yourself, to your essential self, to your neshama? If that's the essence of who you are, if that's the real self, if that's the eternal self, so how do we sometimes fall into the clutches of the Yetzirah to do things which are self-destructive? The gorem ra la'atzmo, and we inflict damage upon ourselves. We can blame the world around us for being the negative influence on us, but at the end of the day, we're bali bechira, we have the ability to choose. God gave us free will. When we choose not to live the best life that we can live, it's suicidal. It's spiritually suicidal. Mi nefesh va'ad basar yechale ba'ofen she'ein shum sonei ba'olam yachol laharalo. The Yetzer convinces you to do things to yourself from head to toe, to spiritually destroy yourself from top to bottom, in a way that no enemy in the world could do to you. That no enemy in the world could do. V'zeh shtus gadol. This is a great folly. This is such foolishness. And we fall for it all the time. It's so irrational. It doesn't make any sense. How do we fall into that trap of the Yitzhara? And I think that's why Hashem, on some level, put the fast of Gedaliah ben Achikam during these days. Because you start to think, the death of a tzaddik is very tragic. The death of a tzaddik at the hands of another human being is even more tragic. The death of a tzaddik at the hands of a fellow Jew, that a Jew could kill another Jew, that's even more tragic. Then a person takes one further step and says, you know what's even more tragic than that? If I have the opportunity to do tshuva during these days, if I have the opportunity to recreate myself in a better way, if I have the opportunity to use the potential that God has given me to live the life of a righteous person and to be written in the Sifron Shel Tzadikim, and I choose not to do that, that's the biggest tragedy of all. Hashem is giving me the opportunity to do tshuva. Hashem's hand is outstretched. Yemincha pshuta lekabel shavim, like we say in the davening. God's right hand is outstretched saying, please grab on, I want to give you life. I've given you potential. I've given you an neshama. I've given you ability. And I want you to go out and do something great for the Jewish people. Or at least do something great for yourself. Rabbi Beryl Wine, really an unbelievably accomplished rav in so many areas of life. A rav of a community, an author of many books, lectures, and an international speaker, an amazing person in so many different ways. Rabbi Wine, in 2014, wrote an autobiography. And in his autobiography, he tells a story, a personal story, that he describes as one of the most life-changing events in his entire existence. It became sort of his mission statement for everything that he accomplished over the course of a lifetime. And he would share this story when people would say, Rabbi Wine, you know, how do you keep going? You have so many projects and you do so many things. You're so driven. Where do you get all that inspiration? Where do you get all that drive from? So he says, I was a young man. I was not even bar mitzvah. I was living in Chicago at the time. And my father took me to greet the then chief rabbi of Israel, Rabbi Yitzhak Halevi Herzog, who was the chief rabbi in Israel after Rav Kook, until 1948. It was after World War II, and Rabbi Herzog came to visit the Jewish community in Chicago. And he said, we met him at the airport, we escorted him to the yeshiva, he gave a lengthy drasha in Yiddish, a Gemara shir, and then afterwards he spoke to the younger crowd. Many of the kids weren't fluent in Yiddish. Rabbi Wine said he understood the shir perfectly, he still remembers the shir. He said, but afterwards, Rabbi Herzog turned to the audience after he finished his formal lecture, a brilliant Talmudic lecture, and he said to the crowd in English, because he was from Ireland, he said, to rebuild the Jewish people. And now I quote from Rabbi Wine's autobiography. Rabbi Herzog told us he had been to the Vatican. This is after World War II. He had been to the Vatican and had asked Pope Pius XII to return the thousands of Jewish children entrusted to Catholic institutions in Europe by parents hoping to save them from annihilation at the hands of the Germans. Now, you've heard these stories of Jews who in desperation gave their children to their non-Jewish neighbors, hoping that their lives would be saved. And unfortunately, many of those children entered into Christian society, entered into the life of the church. So he came to the Pope after World War II and said, give us back our kids. The Pope had flatly refused, claiming that since all the children had been baptized upon entering those institutions, they could not now be given over to those who would raise them in a different faith. Once you were baptized, there's no turning back. And he said, there are children. These are Jewish children. These are biologically Jewish children. Give us back our kids. And the Pope refused. Overcome with emotion, the rabbi put his head down on the lectern and wept bitterly. Rabbi Wine's describing, I'm a 12-year-old kid, 10-year-old, 11-year-old kid in Chicago. The chief rabbi of Israel comes to visit Chicago. He gives a fancy Gemara lecture in Yiddish. And then he turns to the people and says, what are you going to do for Klal Yisrael? And I asked the Pope to give us back our kids. And he said, he just put his head down on the shtender and he started to cry. We were all in shock as the enormity of the Jewish tragedy of World War II began sinking in. And then Rabbi Herzog defiantly raised his head and looked at the young men gathered before him. I cannot save those thousands of Jewish children, he declared. I can't get them back. The Pope's not giving them back. But I ask you, and he turned to the young people in the room and he said, I ask you, how are you going to help to rebuild the Jewish people? 6 million dead in the Holocaust. What are we doing to make sure that we're able to be part of the rebuilding after all of the Chorban? Afterwards, we filed by him to shake his hand and receive his blessing. And he repeated to each and every one of us. Rabbi Wine said, he looked at every Jewish child who walked past him and said, do you understand what I said? Don't forget it. And Rabbi Wine concludes, all my life, Rabbi Herzog's words have echoed in my ears and soul. Numerous times in my rabbinic career, I've been discouraged and downhearted. But then I remembered his words. They have continually inspired and challenged me, shaping many of my decisions and my actions. And that challenge we have heard, Herzog, is the same challenge that I posed to you, Gimel Tishrei, Tzom Gedalia Tafshin Pei, in Queens College. What are you doing to rebuild the Jewish people? It sounds like a weighty challenge. But seriously, what are we doing to rebuild the Jewish people? What are we doing for Klal Yisrael? Do we have aspirations for Klal Yisrael? Hashem gave us so much potential. We're mourning today the fact that Gedalia's life was snuffed out too soon by a fellow Jew. But what are we going to say to the Rabbono Sholem at the end of our own lives if we come before the Creator of the world and Hashem says, you didn't do something for the Jewish people. You didn't even do something for yourself. You fell into that trap that the Peleoitz is describing where the Yetzer Hara grabs onto a person and convinces you of things that are simply self-destructive. And Hashem says, I just want you to be the best you can be. And it's all within you. It's all programmed inside of you. The Gemara tells an amazing idea, an amazing concept. That before a Jew comes to this world, when every one of us was in our mother's womb, before we were born, the Gemara Maseches Nida says that we're taught Torah by a Malach. And that becomes, so to speak, the mission statement of our own personal lives. Each person is taught their own chelek in Torah. Whatever your contribution in Torah is going to be, in Torah life is going to be, you were introduced to it when you were still in utero. And then on the way out, as you're about to come to this world, the Gemara says that the Malach does not allow you to leave until the person's neshama takes a shavua. You take an oath. You make a promise. The Gemara says, Mahi hashavua. What is the promise that we make? So the Gemara says, every Jew has to swear to the following. Tihi tzadik v'al tihi rasha. Keitzad mashubiyin oso. Mahu hashavua shemashubiyin oso. What is the oath that we take? Tihi tzadik v'al tihi rasha. Be a righteous person, and don't be a wicked person. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva says, during these days of the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, we're supposed to see our lives as hanging in the balance. We have to make a choice. If we do tshuva, we will become a tzaddik. Maybe not a tzaddik in the greatest sense of the word tzaddik, but certainly in a relative sense, we'll be found innocent. Hashem will say, you're committed to making a difference in the world, to living with purpose and meaning, and I grant you life. If, God forbid, we don't do tshuva during these days, the Rambam says, God forbid, we could be put in the other book that, of course, we don't want to find ourselves in. So we swore to Hashem when we came to this world. We took an oath. As we entered into this world, every one of us took an oath that we are committed to what? To being tzaddikim, to living the life of righteousness, to doing the best that we can in the service of Hashem. And a shavua is a very, very serious thing. A shavuah is such a serious thing that the Gemara says in Maseches Shavuos that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said in the Ten Commandments, the third of the Ten Commandments, Lo sisa Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashav, don't use God's name in vain. When you take an oath in the name of God, do not take God's name in vain. The Gemara says at that moment when Hashem declared, Lo sisa Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashav, the whole world was trembling. Shekola olam kulo nizdazeya, the whole world was shaking. And all of the averus of the Torah can be erased. But by taking Hashem's name in vain, by swearing falsely, by using Hashem's name improperly, the Torah says, lo yinakeh. It cannot be erased. And by all the averus of the Torah, the person is punished, but not their family. For this avera, the family is punished. And for all the averus of the Torah, the person is punished, but not the world. For this avera, the world is punished also. The Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe, says, there are 10 days of tshuva, Aseres Yemei Tshuva. The 10 days of tshuva correspond to the 10 commandments, which means today, the 3rd of Tishrei, corresponds to the 3rd of the 10 commandments. Lo sisa Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. Don't take God's name in vain. The neshama that you've been given, that every one of us has been given, the divine spark inside of ourselves, is Hashem's name. It's a piece of God inside of ourselves. Your neshama is a little piece of the essence of God. A person's name is the essence of that person. The Baal Shem Tov said, if you look at the word neshama, it's very interesting. Look at the word neshama. Nun, shin, mem, hey. What are the middle two letters of the word neshama? Shame, your name. The Arizal says that when your parents selected a Jewish name for you, that was defining your mission statement. It was the essence of your neshama. So when we have a little piece of God inside of us, so to speak, we have a little piece of Hashem's name inside of us. We carry the name of God. And we swore to what? We swore, we made a commitment to live a life of righteousness. Today, Gimel Tishrei is the day, says the Sfas Emes, that corresponds to that pasuk of the Ten Commandments. Lo sisa Hashem Hashem Elokecha Lashav. And therefore, we have to take so seriously that oath that we made, that promise that we made. We have to believe that we have the tools and the skills, and the spiritual energy inside of ourselves to accomplish awesome things in the world. To give God's name a place in the world. Regardless of what everyone else says. We could be a tiny people, We could be a tiny percentage of the population in Queens College. We could be a tiny percentage of the entire universe. But the Jewish people have always committed to make the most difference in the world. That's who we are. That's just the nature of who we are. So I want to reinterpret that Gemara that says that for this Aveira, there's not a lot of wiggle room. For this Aveira, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I can't forgive such an Aveira. And not only does it affect you, it affects your family. And not only does it affect your family, it affects the world. It's not saying it's such a big Aveira, God's going to punish you and your family and the whole world's going to be punished. It's saying that if you don't live up to your potential, your family loses out. Past, present, and future. All the sacrifices that your ancestors made to pass on that Torah tradition to you, if you don't embrace it with pride, so then your family loses out. Your current family loses out. Your future family loses out. Your children, your grandchildren. The Judaism that you embrace right now, in accordance with the commitments that you make right now, that is going to affect the Judaism of your great-grandchildren. It's a fact. If you're serious about it, there's a better chance that your children will be serious about it, and your grandchildren will be serious about it, and your great-grandchildren, and the illustrious chain of Jewish tradition goes on. But if, God forbid, we don't take our vow seriously, if we carry God's name in vain, an aveira that Chazal say is something that Hashem could hardly erase, then our family loses out. And the whole world loses out. For all other aveiros of the Torah, nifran mimenu, the individual is punished. V'kan mimenu mikola olam kulo. It's not that the world is going to face the wrath of God because you took God's name in vain. But it's that humanity loses out. The world could be a better place. We need leaders. We need people who are going to try to make a difference in the world. That's what Rav Herzog was crying about. We lost 6 million people in the Holocaust. Every one of us has to see ourselves as survivors of that destruction. We survived Tav Shanai and Tess. Think about it. We davened last Rosh Hashanah, Hashem grant us life. We made it through. You know why? Because Hashem obviously believed we could accomplish something great. So as we enter into Tav Shin Pei, let's sign up to do something great. Let's be committed to carry that name of God inside of ourselves in a serious way. Let's not take Hashem's name in vain. Chavetz Chaim gave an amazing mashal. Imagine someone comes to his friend and he says, you know, Yankel, I need to borrow $10,000. Oh, that's a lot of money. I know, I've got this idea, I want to invest it, I'll make sure I'll get it back to you, don't worry. All right, when are you going to give the money back? Give me 3 months, I'll get the money back to you. Okay. You trust the guy, he's a good friend, he gives him $10,000. 3 months go by, knock on the door, oh, he's back. Okay, Yankel, I'm here to return the money to you. And he hands him an envelope. And Yankel looks at the envelope, and it's the exact same envelope that he gave him 3 months ago. And it's still sealed. It's the exact money that he gave him. So he says, what's going on here? So he said, I'm giving you back your money. I borrowed $10,000, I'm returning $10,000. So he says, no, I don't understand. This is the same $10,000 I gave you. I know this envelope. I sealed this envelope myself. He opens it up. He says, these are the exact same bills I gave you. What's going on here? Where was this money? So the fellow says, I was sitting in my desk drawer for the last 3 months. So he says, I don't understand. I needed that money. I also had things I wanted to invest in. I gave it to you because you told me you had an idea. You were going to do something with it. You were going to turn $10,000 into $100,000. I lent you that money because I trusted that you would do something meaningful with it. They would try to spend it in a way that was beneficial for you. I didn't give you the money so it could sit in the desk drawer. He said, but I'm giving you back the same money, so like, what's lost? What's lost is all that potential. What's lost is what I would have done with that money had I kept it for myself. The Chavetz Chaim says that's what David HaMelech said in Tehillim. Niki kapayim uvar leivav. We want to come before Hashem, niki kapayim, with clean hands, uvar leivav, and heart. Asher lo nasa lashav nafshi. That we didn't carry our nefesh l'shav in vain. That we didn't borrow kamrod to not accomplish something. Hashem gave us a bit of himself called our neshama because God thought we could do something great in this world with it. That we could enhance his great name in this world. And if we just go through life leaving our neshama sitting in a desk drawer and then we give it back to Hashem at the end and say, well, you know, it wasn't so good but it also wasn't so bad. Hashem says, that was a terrible waste. That was a terrible waste. Asher lo nasa l'shav nafshi. We should be someone with clean hands and a pure heart who accomplished with our hands, who did things with our emotions, And then we could say, Lo nasa l'shav nafshi, we didn't carry our soul in vain. The Chavetz Chaim ends the mashal there. What's the end of that pasuk? You'll remember the end of the pasuk. Asher lo nasa l'shav nafshi, v'lo nishba l'mirma. And we did not swear in vain. It's hinting exactly to this idea. We took an oath when we came to this world. So you'll say, it's not fair, it's too much, it's overwhelming. You know, I'm trying to just major in biology. I don't have time to also change the world. Why did Hashem make me take that oath? I'll tell you why Hashem made you take that oath. I'll tell you, my friends, why Hashem made you take that oath. Because it's entirely realistic for you to change the world. It's entirely realistic for you to be a tzaddik, a tzaddikus, to live a life of righteousness. It's not an impossibility. Every Jew has it inside of himself or herself. It's just a question of digging it out and bringing it up to the surface. On Yom Kippur, we begin Yom Kippur with Kol Nidre. Kol Nidre is a funny process. Kol Nidre, we're trying to kind of wiggle out of an oath. Right? All the promises that we made, Hashem, don't be too... Because we're asking for Hashem's mercy in case we haven't lived up to the oath. But as we take out the Sifrei Torah for Kol Nidre, what do we say? Another pasuk can tell him. Or Zarua Letzadik, Will Yisrael Lev Simcha. The Chazan, as he carries the Sefer Torah to the Bima, repeats that pasuk over and over again. Or Zarua Letzadik. Light is planted for a tzaddik. Light is planted? Who plants light? You don't ever plant a light bulb? What does it mean, Or Zarua Letzadik? Light is sown for the righteous. Light is planted for a tzaddik. What does it mean to plant light? Hashem planted light inside of every one of us. Our neshama is an or. It's an awesome light. But it's planted. It's buried. What's it buried in? It's buried in a body. Right now it's buried in room 250 of this hall. Right? It's buried in Queens College. It's buried in New York. It's buried in Olam Hazeh. And our job is to allow that light to sprout. To allow that light to flourish. One of my Rebbeim always likes to compare it to a Shabbos lamp, you know, where the light's always on the inside. It's just a question of how much you open the shade and how much you let that light shine outwards. It's a beautiful mashal. That's every one of us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted a light inside of us. And on Yom Kippur, as we're grappling with the Shavua, Kol Nidre, we're reminding ourselves as we take that Sefer Torah in our hand, the way that a person sometimes swears in the Bible, and says, Or Zaruah Letzadik, Hashem, I'm going to try a little bit harder to dig that light out of the inside of my being. I want to allow that light to shine out. That light is your light, Hashem. And I want to allow it to shine in the world. I don't want it to get lost in all of my mundane pursuits. That I put a lot of time into everything else, but in terms of being able to give proper respect and expression to my neshama, somehow that gets lost along the way. On Yom Kippur, it's a day where every Jew digs deep. Where every Jew brings out the inner essence and desire to live in that light. The Rambam, Maimonides, in the Laws of Divorce, the end of the second chapter, the Rambam describes a very tragic situation. A Jew has really lost his way. What happens, says the Rambam, if a man refuses to give his wife a get? Their marriage is over. They no longer are interested in living together. Right? The proper thing is, the Torah law demands that the husband has to serve his wife a divorce document, a Jewish divorce document. What happens if the husband is a recalcitrant husband, he refuses to give his wife a get? And the Beis Din, the Jewish court, has determined this marriage is over. It's abusive what he's doing. He's holding his wife hostage. She can't move on with her life and get remarried until he gives her the get. Maybe he's using it for manipulative reasons. Maybe he's trying to get money. Maybe he wants more custody of the kids. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible crime to hold his wife as an aguna, that she's a chained woman, because until she receives that get, she's not able to move on with her life. So there's no way that the Jewish community is going to allow such a thing. So Beis Din steps in, and forces him to give his wife a get. Okay? Don't try this at home. But Beis Din sends some of their bodyguards to the guy's house, knock on the door, he opens the door, Beis Din kicks open the door, they push their way in, right? And they grab the fellow, and kofen oso, they beat him up until he says the magic words, Rotzeh ani, I want to give a get. Because a get has to be given willingly in halacha. So we have to beat him up until he says, Rotzeh ani, I want to give the get. Says the Rambam, what an absurd joke. That's called giving a get willingly. You grab the guy and you twist his arm. Now do you want to give the get? No. Now do you want to give the get? No. Now do you want to give the get? As they're about to snap his arm off. Okay, Rotzeh ani, I want to give the get. Oh, look, he wants to give the get. Sofer writes the get. He gives his wife a get. and she moves on with her life. Says the Rambam, how on earth is that called giving a get willingly? Halacha says a get has to be given willingly because he uttered the magic words, Rotza Ani. So all of a sudden now that's what he really wants? The Rambam says an amazing thing. The Rambam was a rationalist philosopher. The Rambam was a doctor. The Rambam wasn't a Hasidish Rebbe, but the Rambam sounds like a Hasidish Rebbe in this piece of Rambam. The Rambam says, no, you have to understand. Deep down inside, every Jew wants to do the right thing. And sometimes our Yetzer Hara gets in the way. Look up the Rambam, then the second chapter of Hilchos Gerushin, the Laws of Divorce. Deep down inside, every Jew wants to do the right thing. You're not beating him up. The essential him is a good person, is a good Jew, is an neshama. You're beating the Yetzer Hara up. The Yetzer Hara is forcing him, stopping him from doing something which is so obvious it's the proper thing to do. But he won't allow himself to do it. So we beat up his Yetzer Hara, allowing the true essence of who he is to emerge. And when he says, Rotze Ani, I want, it is deep down inside what he really wants. In his heart of heart, in his soul of souls, it is deep down inside what he really wants. Rav Moshe Wolfson Shlita says that Yom Kippur is the day where every Jew beats up their Yetzer Hara, kicks the Yetzer Hara out of the way, and says, Rabbono Sholom, Rotze Ani, I want. Rav Moshe Wolfson brings a lot of gematrias. He says the gematria of the word Rotze Ani, the numerical value of the words Rotze Ani is 362. The same gematria as the word Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur is the day that every Jew shows up and says, Rotze Ani, I want. And it's really the culmination of what we began in Chodesh Elul. Because Elul stands for Ani Lidodi Vidodi Li. So by Yom Kippur, Ani Lidodi. The I that sometimes thinks that I want this or I want that, I want to make more money, I want to get a better job, I want to have more pleasure in this world, I want to sleep later instead of getting up in the morning, I want to do this, I wish I could go to the mall on Shabbos or go to the movies with my friends, I wish I could get that cheeseburger with the large fries and the huge soda for $1.99 instead of like half the burger and half the fries and half the soda for like $29.99 at the kosher restaurant, right? That's what I think I want. But on Yom Kippur, I say, no, Rotze Ani. What do I want? Ani l'dodi v'dodi li. What I want is what you want, Hashem. Rotze Ani is gematria Yom Kippur. In potential, every Jew is a tzaddik. That's why we swore to it when we came to this world. And again, the tragedy that we're commemorating today is the death of a Jew at the hands of a fellow Jew. But again, what happens when, God forbid, we don't dig deep during these days, and we don't use our potential, and we don't use the life that we've been given, and we allow that money to sit in the desk drawer, all of that wasted opportunity that Hashem has given to us because He believes in us. He made us swear to it because He knows it's true. Hashem knows that we can do it. It just requires, again, opening up. Or Zaru al Tzadik, just to dig out from all the dirt of this world, that light that's buried inside of us. To just open our hearts and we'll realize that every Jew is a Tzadik. There's a Tzadik named the Rebbe of Kamarna. So he writes in his Sefer, he says, if you take the word Lev, we often think, if I asked you to point to your neshama, most of us would probably go like this. Point to our heart. Neshama actually permeates the whole body, right? But there's a part of neshama that we feel in our heart. The epicenter of our emotions, of our feelings. The Rebbe of Kamarna says, take the word lev, the Hebrew word for heart, lamed beis, and spell out lamed beis. Okay, so let's do it together. How do you spell lamed? How do you spell lamed? Lamed mem dalet. How do you spell the letter Bez? Bet. How do you spell Bet? Spelled like Bayit. Right? Bet, Yud, Tav. Okay? If you open up your heart, so to speak, that's what you're doing. You're taking the letters and you're expanding them. You're writing out the letters. You're trying to breathe more life into them. You're expanding. It's called Miloy. Expanding the words. Expanding the gematria. The gematria of Lev and Miloy, if you spell out Lamed Bez, if you open up that heart, so to speak, it's gematria 486. Right? Lamed Mem Dalet is 74. Bet Yud Tav is 412, so that's 486. Says the Rebbe of Kamarna in his Sefer Heichal Bracha, he says, if you spell out Lev, Lamed Beis, 486 is Gematria Va'amech Kulam Tzadikim. But the Navi Yeshaya says, Va'amech Kulam Tzadikim. The Jewish people, not only as an entire unit, collectively are we a tzaddik, but every member of Ameich, of the Jewish people, kulam tzaddikim, we're all tzaddikim. You just have to open up your heart. You just have to dig out that light that's buried inside. And again, Tzom Gedalia is the day where we face that harsh reality that sometimes a tzaddik's life is cut short. Let's not do that to ourselves. Maybe that's why Hashem gave us some Gedalia during these days, during the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah. Hashem wants us to think, I could also be a tzaddik. And what a tragedy it was that a tzaddik's life was not able to reach its potential. It was taken away. It wasn't able to be given full expression. When we choose during these days to do tshuva, to make commitments to do for ourselves and for our fellow Jews and for Klal Yisrael and for the whole world, because that's really the task that Hashem has charged the Jewish people with. When we live a life of purpose and righteousness and holiness, regardless of what else is going on around us, even if it's not popular, to think a certain way or to dress a certain way or to act a certain way or to talk a certain way or to practice a certain way. But when we do that, when we make that choice, then we're able to answer to that shvuah on the third day of Tishrei, corresponding to Lo Sisa Hashem Hashem Elokecha L'Shem. I'll just end with an amazing story. One beautiful story. The Rebbe of Radzin, when he was a young boy, Rav Gershom Henoch of Radzin, the son of the Beis Yaakov, the Ishbitzer Rebbe. So apparently in the town where they were, there was some type of lake or some type of swimming area where people would go to swim in the summer, believe it or not. And Rav Gershom, a young boy, he wanted very badly to go swimming one time. He was a little kid. The way to get, so to speak, from the mainland to the swimming area, you had to go across this little bridge, this little rope bridge. And it was a very narrow bridge that only allowed one person to pass at a time. There was an elderly fellow who was making his way across the bridge, a little too slowly for young Gershom Henoch. And he was getting impatient. And finally he decides, you know what, I'm just going to try to sneak past this old fellow, get him out of the way. So he goes up and he tries to like push his way through. And the elderly person nearly falls off the ropes, falls off the bridge. And he screams at him. He says, hey, you're mechutzuf. It's chutzpahdik. What are you doing? Respect for an elder. How do you do that? So Gershom Henoch, the son of the Ishbitzer Rebbe, the son of the Beis Yaakov, big tzaddik. So he says to the old man, he says, do you know who my father is? So he says, I don't care. I don't care if your father's Rishon Baruch Hai, the old man says to him. I don't care who your father is. A little kid pushing an older person out of the way. And he was very upset. The old person, this elderly person was very upset. He decides he's going to go to the Beis Yaakov to tell him what happened. So he goes to the Beis Yaakov. He says, you know, your son, he's a wild kid. He almost pushed me off the little footbridge tonight. He was on his way to the pool, whatever, to the swimming area, down by the lake. But you need to speak to him. So his father was very embarrassed. The Beis Yaakov apologizes. He calls his son. And he calls his son over and he says, you know, what happened? He says, I wanted to go swimming. He says, oh, yeah, but there's an older person in the way. So he said, what happened when you pushed past him? He said, he called me chutzpahdik. Right? So I said, well, and what did you say to him? I said, do you know who my father is? My father's the Rebbe in this town. My father's the tzaddik in this town. He said, and what did he say to you? He said, I don't care if your father's Rishon Baruch Hai. So he says, okay, so I heard all that from the older person. And what did you say back to him after that? He said, I didn't say anything. He said, why didn't you say anything? He said, because it was pointless responding to him. He said, Tati, I know that you're greater than a Rishon Baruch Hai. I don't have to respond to that. I know that you're greater than a Rishon Baruch Hai. And Beis Yaakov started thinking to himself. He closed his eyes, he started thinking, and he said to his son, he said, the old man was right, and you're also right. You're a mechutzif, don't push old people out of the way. Be respectful of elders. He said, but the truth is, maybe you're right. The Beis Yaakov said an amazing thing, a shocking thing. The Beis Yaakov said, maybe I could be greater than Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai. Maybe you were right when you didn't respond because you actually believe that your father was greater than Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai. Okay, you're a little 5-year-old kid, you don't understand Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai. You think the Beis Yaakov saw himself as greater than Rashbi and Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai? But he started thinking, he said, maybe my son's right. Who says I can't be greater than Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai? As long as I'm alive, who's to say how far I can reach? Maybe I could even surpass Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai. We look at ourselves in the mirror and we say, I'm not a tzaddik. And I'm certainly not a tzaddik in like a real sense. Maybe I could be, you know, an okay person. We took an oath when we came to this world to be tzaddikim. During the Aseret Yemei Teshuvah, our lives are hanging in the balance and we have to make a choice. Do I want to be a tzaddik or do I want to be a rasha? Whether I'll be a tzaddik like Rabbi Shimon Baruch Hai, I don't know. But I have to sign up. I have to dig deep and I have to believe that if I'm alive, I'm still in the game. I could be the greatest tzaddik that ever was. I could be the greatest tzaddikus who ever was. Who capped the imaos at 4? Why can't one of you become one of the next imaos? Who says? What do you mean? 3 are the fathers, 4 are the mothers. That's where it ends. Who says? Says who? Who says how far your potential can go? We don't know. Let's try on this day, as we, again, we think about Gedaliah ben Achikam's life being cut short. Let's not be self-destructive Jews. Let's be Jews with positivity and with hope and with confidence. Dig deep and believe that we could change the world. Let's answer that cry of Herzog. After World War II, after the Jewish people lost so much, we have to be prepared and confident that we have the ability to rebuild. So I give us all a bracha. We should have a gemar chesima tova. Everyone should dig deep. Actualize that potential that's buried deep inside of you. And Amir Tzashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will look at his world, and Hashem will declare, Va'amech kulam tzadik. Thank you very much.